shot. A little boy is dead. He was shot in the neck. We've got to figure out why this happened.
Two rival gangs come into contact with each other. It doesn't matter whether it's a birthday party or whether it's a baptism. This is not going to end well.
It was a recipe for disaster.
Fabulous week ahead.
Yes. Following what was a beautiful weekend, that warmth will continue with above seasonal temperatures for the entire week ahead until the beginning of June next Sunday, really. A high of 27 tomorrow, possible afternoon showers. Warmest day of the week, Thursday, 29 degrees.
We'll take that. Yes. Thanks so much, Courtney, and thank you for watching. We're back at 11. See you then.
This is Global News. I'm Thomas Dias. It's 25 degrees at 7 o'clock. A group of concerned citizens met today in a riding of Calgary Bow to gain support in recalling MLA Demetrios Nikolaides, along with Rajan Sani, who is the MLA for Calgary Northwest. Jenny Yeremy is the organizer of the Calgary Bow recall campaign.
The reason why we chose these two ride-ins were for a couple of reasons. Number one, these are people that have supported everything that this government has done. And number two, this is about our kids. These are the education ministers. One of them was the advanced education minister, but we haven't forgotten that. But yeah, we're starting there.
She says the group needs over 14,000 people in both ridings to sign the petitions. On the federal side of things, the Liberal caucus has voted down rules that would have strengthened the say of backbenchers in who should lead their party. Kyle Duggan with more.
Many Liberal MPs still feel the shock and awe of former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau clinging to power for months, even as calls from within his party grew for him to step down before he finally did in January. But not enough of them felt this way to adopt new rules set out under the Reform Act that would prevent that from happening again by emboldening caucus members, allowing them to force a leadership review. Liberals were tight-lipped after their meeting. Caucus Chair James Maloney would only confirm that a majority voted against adopting the rules. Kyle Duggan, The Canadian Press, Ottawa.
King Charles and Queen Camilla will soon be in Canada for a two-day royal visit that's already being called historic. As Sarah Ritchie reports, the king is set to open Parliament Tuesday morning.
A speech from the throne is intended to signal the government's plans for a new legislative session. This throne speech on Tuesday is meant to send a strong signal beyond our borders because King Charles will be reading the speech as our head of state. Historian and royal commentator Carolyn Harris says it's a showcase of Canada's constitutional monarchy in action and a direct response to U.S. President Donald Trump's threats to make Canada the 51st state. The King and Queen are expected to draw large crowds to downtown Ottawa. Robert Finch, the chairman of the Monarchist League of Canada, says all of this is driving a revival of interest in the monarchy. Sarah Ritchie, The Canadian Press, Ottawa.
And talks between Canada Post and negotiators from its union are expected to resume over the next few days. The two parties met today amid warnings of mail delivery delays tied to a national ban on overtime for postal workers. In sports, Stuart Skinner was sharp again in net with Connor McDavid and Zach Hyman each scoring a pair of goals to help the Edmonton Oilers celebrate a 6-1 win over the visiting Dallas Stars on Sunday for a 2-1 lead in the NHL West Final. In men's soccer, the Cavalry FC were in fine form today celebrating a 4-0 win over Winnipeg's Valor FC at ATCO Field. On the women's side of things, the Calgary Wild had to settle for a 1-1 draw with Vancouver yesterday. In Canadian elite basketball, the Calgary Surge have improved to 3-1 on the season after winning their season home opener at the Winsport Event Center 93-61 today over the visiting Winnipeg Sea Bears in the second half of a home-and-home series. The Surge had come out on top in Winnipeg on Friday. When it comes to the NBA playoffs, the Knicks need a big win on the road tonight as they visit the Indiana Pacers, who have a 2-0 lead in the NBA East Finals after winning both games in New York. And the Tampa Bay Rays routed the Toronto Blue Jays 13-0 today for a 5-game winning streak and their second series sweep this season. Global News Sky Tracker weather, a clear sky overnight with a low of 12 degrees. Tomorrow starts off sunny with a risk of late day showers and thunderstorms and a high of 27. It's 25 degrees. Tomorrow starts off sunny with a risk of late day showers and thunderstorms and a high of 27. It's 25 degrees. Breaking news when it happens. Your next scheduled newscast at 7:30. I'm Thomas Dias.
Explore Calgary's best rentals. Book your showing today at renttruman.com. Live better. Rent Truman.
You're listening to Best of Programming from Shea Ganem, 9 to noon weekdays on QR Calgary.
We're going to move on to a conversation we've touched on a few times. This is a different way of looking at it, and an important one, too. If you remember during the federal election campaign, a lot of the talk, was driven by the tariffs. And one of the strategies that I think both the parties that were competing to become government had talked about was doing what they can to deal with the U.S. relationship, but at the same time, strengthening, bolstering, even supercharging the Canadian economy and building things like transportation and energy super corridors that run coast to coast and all these sorts of things, getting rid of interprovincial trade barriers and having free trade within Canada, all these sorts of things. Good ideas. Don't get me wrong. I think it's very important. And we talked about it before the whole Trump thing. Our premier famously said it's easier for Alberta companies, some of them, to sell their products in Europe or in other countries than it is in Ontario because of the way things are set up. So there's work that needs to be done. But now that we're sort of watching and waiting and saying, okay, well, when does this work start? How do you even do it? Because it's not like Mark Carney's in a position where he can just wave a magic wand and suddenly all of these barriers disappear. I mean, it's not his decision to make, at least not alone. That's not the way this country works. There's a lot of negotiation that needs to take place. Jörg Brozcik is a professor and a Laurier Research Chair in Political Science at Wilfrid Laurier University and joins us now to talk about this. Jörg, thanks so much for being with us. I always appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Shane.
So the system that, you know, they both said that they want to change, and now Carney has to change to follow through on what he promised. What is it? When we talk about the current system, it's meant to be a power-sharing situation of sorts, right? And there's a lot of autonomy given to the provinces in our system, isn't there?
Yeah, that's correct. So first of all, from a comparative perspective, Canadian federalism is indeed one of the most decentralized federal systems that we know. So there's a huge obstacle here that essentially comes from the constitutional division of powers. The main problem that I see here is that if you go back and take a look at how the founders of the Constitution thought about this problem, is that they thought each level of government or each order of government could work more or less independently from each other. So that's how they organized federalism. The reality, however, is it's much more messy in fact, and there are no what we would call watertight compartments where they can really work within their sphere. There's a lot of interdependencies, there's a lot of ambiguity and even overlap, and you can see this in so many areas. Economic policy is one of the most obvious examples here.
Yeah, and it's so intertwined. And you're talking about the provinces, and you're right, that is a major hurdle. But it doesn't stop there, does it? I mean, we've still got municipalities, we've got indigenous groups. Like, it doesn't just end with the federal government and the provincial governments.
Absolutely. So if we really rethink how our federal system could work and how we could address this institutional deficit, that means the lack of really a framework across policy sectors, but also among peak orders of government, how we can tackle this is really we need to think about how we can make this more durable, more ongoing, more organized. And today in the 21st century, I would absolutely 100% agree. This cannot stop with provinces and territories. It definitely needs to include municipalities and, of course, indigenous peoples as well.
Just for selfish reasons, here in Alberta, of course, a lot of this talk comes down to natural resources, oil and gas largely, but not exclusively. Where does that fit into this conversation? Again, the province says over and over, rightly, that this is our, we handle this. This is our responsibility, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. But like from a formal point of view, it is a jurisdiction of the provinces, natural resources. There's no doubt about it. But it's not just about natural resources. Again, if you think back about the electoral election campaign that we just had and also previous discussions, we're talking about nation-building projects. How can we reimagine Canada in the long term. And then you cannot have a separate discussion or a premier just insisting on his, this is ours and here's a list of demands. And if these demands are not met, we have a national unity crisis. We need to find a way to sit together and develop something like shared norms, like a common ownership of the problem. And that works only, that's what we know from research, both on Canada, but also comparatively. It can only, you need to grow this, you need to cultivate this over time. And the first step would be to really rethink, develop a framework, how governments can come together and work together on an ongoing basis. One example where we can see how it could work is internal trade at the moment, where we see much more meetings, much more effort than we had seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's on the radar screen now. People are talking about it. It's become a priority. But are we looking at it oversimplistically? Or, like I said earlier, I mean, the Prime Minister can't just wave a wand and all of these things go away. Like, this is going to be really hard work, and it's probably going to take a very long time.
Absolutely. So this can't happen overnight for sure. But I think if there's a time to, again, like in the past, I think about the 60s, for example, talk about this more seriously, it would be now. And having this discussion about both the policy changes that we want to see for the long-term economic policy, changing how the Canadian economy is situated in the new geopolitical context, and at the same time, coupling this discussion with the necessary governance reforms that we would need to see. Again, just a reminder, the premiers and the prime minister, they haven't met for almost 5 years in person through what we call the First Minister's Conference. There was a huge time lag between December 2018 and then January 2025 when they first came together in Ottawa. So this should not happen, and it should actually have happened much earlier to get this discussion going.
I mean, we've heard a lot of talk. Have we seen any action? I guess that's the question, right? We've seen all of them talking about we need to do a better job in terms of managing the very things that you're talking about, but have we got anywhere on it yet?
Yeah, that's the big problem that I'm seeing. I don't see a clear sort of understanding of this problem. And one example is if you take a look at the election platforms from both parties, they always mention like, yeah, we have to sit together with the provinces and territories and maybe other actors here. But there's no real indication of let's also maybe develop a plan how we can change the system and tackle this institutional deficit of, yeah, not enough intergovernmental cooperation for the long term as we know it from other systems, other federal systems.
Yeah, and the work needs to get started yesterday. Your great conversation. Thanks so much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Shay, for having me again.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Yep, talk to you later. Jörg Groscheck, professor and Laurier Research Chair in Political Science at Wilfrid Laurier University. What's the timeline? Like, I'm struggling with this because there was a lot of talk during the campaign in terms of we got to do this, we got to do this right away, we've got to move fast, there's no time to waste, we got to, you know how it went. So are we at a point now where we start saying, okay, so where is that? Like, how quickly are we jumping the gun here? Is it too early? Do we need to be a little more impatient? It's only been 3 weeks since the election, right? So I'm trying to be reasonable, but at the same time, there's not time to just sort of, well, we'll see how things work out. It seems like we need an all-hands-on-deck approach, and I don't know if that's happening. Now, Jörg was talking about first minister's meetings, which we have not had in this country, as he said, for a very, very long time. We did as part of the response to the tariff situation, right? So we've got that happening. And then, as you know, Mark Carney announcing that there will be a meeting coming up June 2nd, I believe it is, the first week of June in Saskatoon. So it will be a first minister's meeting like we used to have. And June 2nd, Carney has announced it in Saskatoon. So he's coming to Saskatchewan, which is good. They only won one seat in Saskatchewan. So maybe it's a little bit of bridge building there. But he was talking about, you know, as he announced it, the big nation building projects, removing international trade, internal trade barriers and building one Canadian economy. We got to get to work. We got to do these things. So I guess we wait till June 2nd. We start the meeting. And how quickly does any of this stuff actually happen, right? Like, I mean, if you really want to play it out, Trump's gone in, what, 4 years? Let's call it four. It's not quite, it's about three and something. how far down the road have we actually, what's your faith in the Canadian government to actually have made meaningful progress over the course of 3 years? Hopefully we do. I think we have the ability to do it, but I don't know if the track record would indicate that we've been very successful at attempting things like that.
It's Gord Gillies for Home Instead. Speaking with Debbie Franchuk, RN and co-owner of Home Instead, she says when her clients finally discover Home Instead, they tell her, "The care you provide my parents is amazing. More people have to know what you do." It's no wonder why they refer Home Instead as the best kept secret. Now that you know the best kept secret, share it with your mom and dad. When your elderly loved one needs more care, choose Home Instead as your care partner. Visit homeinsteadcalgary.com.
Living with diabetes? Think pharmacist. Your pharmacist can help make it easier and, if appropriate, offer services like on-site A1C average blood sugar testing, lifestyle support, and more. Book an appointment today at shoppersdrugmart.ca/diabetes.
Do your vet bills make you go? Then your local Curis Pharmacy can help. All Curis locations can now fill prescriptions for veterinary medication. They have access to thousands of veterinary compounded and commercial products, all at an affordable price. Your pet will still get the best for their health, and you'll save some money. It's a win-win. Curis. Curis, a pharmacy like no other. Find a location near you at curispharmacy.ca.
Filling your speakers with live Stampeders football. Get ready for the next exciting game on QR Calgary.
The Stamps gallop into the season with a visit from the Hamilton Tiger Cats Saturday, June 7th. QR Calgary has all the action with your pregame show at 3:30 and your kickoff at 5.
All the hits, all the plays, all season long. Bringing you pregame, play-by-play, postgame, Stampeders football. Brought to you by Furnace Family. Done right day or night. FurnaceFamily.com.
Larry from SAS Comfort Shoes, celebrating their biggest sale ever.
All our SAS shoes are on sale. Save $60 when you buy two pair at regular price or shop our big inventory clearance.
Biggest sale ever.
All our SAS shoes are on sale. Save $60 when you buy two pair at regular price or shop our big inventory clearance. Up to 50% off men's and ladies' overstocked shoes.
Excellent. SAS shoes are the only brand with six widths. And now, introducing new styles by Vionic and Remonte. Hurry to SAS Comfort Shoes across from Chinook Center. ALS doesn't wait, and neither do we. Join a powerful Calgary tradition at the 29th annual Betty's Run for ALS, June 8th at North Glenmore Park. Every step supports Albertans living with and affected by ALS and helps fund vital provincial ALS research. Sign up now at bettysrun.ca.
It's finally here. The last show with David Cooper.
I am David Cooper with the stuff that you're thinking about but are too afraid to ask. We're talking relationships, climate anxiety, that weird thing you saw on TikTok last night, all of it. No filters, just real talk about real life. So grab your emotional support water bottle and tune in.
The last show.
Tonight at 11 on QR Calgary.
This is the best of Shea Ganim on QR Calgary.
Let's get an update on this story. And I just want to say I have so much respect for people in the media that just go out and do the work, right? We hear so much talk about the media this and the media that and the training of, you know, the audience to try and discount things they don't want to hear and things like that. And then you've got people who just get on with the job and do the work, you know, comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable, as they say. And Carrie Tate of the Globe and Mail is leading the charge in this province in some of this coverage that is led to a lot of things, and I think will continue to lead to more. I don't think we're anywhere near the end of this story, and we've already got a lot to talk about. So let's get caught up. It's all involving the AHS procurement scandal, the firing of the AHS head, or the departure of the AHS, all those things. And it goes back to the Turkish Tylenol and the Oilers. I mean, the list goes on. That's the thing. It's hard to keep track of it all, but Carrie's the one who's uncovered so much of it. She can help us out. Carrie, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, let's start with the latest scoop, which came out over the weekend, and that is Danielle Smith, chief of staff, living in a home owned by the sister of Sam Moraes, right? Now, that name's probably familiar. So walk us through what you uncovered in relation to where Marshall Smith was living.
Right. So Marshall Smith was he's now her former chief of staff,
right.
But while he was in the legislature working for her, starting in August 2023, was living in a new infill home in a mature neighborhood in Edmonton by the university. He had some roommates, and the home had been recently purchased in August, just before he moved in, by a woman who, as you mentioned, is the sister of Sam Moraes. Now, you know, you can have landlords and you can live wherever you want, except in this one, what jumps out is that Mr. Moraes had was negotiating for contracts with Alberta Health Services, and the former CEO alleges that Marshall Smith was putting pressure on her to do deals that would benefit private companies, including those owned by Mr. Moraes. So it was, you know, there is a perceived conflict of interest there.
Well, that's the thing, Carrie. I mean, like you say, there's not, you can rent a home from wherever you want to rent a home from, and that doesn't
yeah.
matter. But it's the threads that run through all of this, and that family name comes up in so many ways. Let's just go through some of it, because it started, if you want, did it start with the Turkish Tylenol situation? Is that the first encounter that we have with Moraes and dealings with the provincial government?
Good your memory is and how picky you want to be. The very first thing, but people didn't really, we didn't realize the tie really until, you know, years later. Remember those Vanch masks, those ones that the nurses were complaining about were smelly? And but the Tylenol was a major one. What's interesting about the Tylenol is at the time, the government did not announce how much the deal was worth. It didn't announce the company that was involved in importing it. Those came out from reporting, and a lot of that was actually my colleague, Alana Smith. Those are kind of basic facts that governments should be telling you from the outset. But if the government's not going to tell us, you know, we need to dig and find those things out. But yes, Tylenol is the big kind of headline that we tie and associate with Sam Moraes.
And then from there, the hockey tickets came up, right?
Then the hockey tickets. Of course, everyone remembers that the Tylenol deal didn't go very well. There were some problems importing. The Tylenol we didn't use very much of it. But then we do fast forward to last summer when the Globe revealed that Mr. Moraes had given hockey tickets to members of this government and staff in the box seats.
Then we've got building sales. We've got surgical. I mean, this is the thing. Like, it just keeps piling up, right?
Well, then the next one, you know, in chronological order was the AHS had fired its CEO. And through the reporting, we had learned that Sam Moraes had financial interests in two chartered surgical facilities, those private companies that do operations for AHS. And that Marshall Smith was allegedly, according to the former CEO, putting pressure on the former CEO to benefit those chartered surgical facilities. It's important to note that none of the allegations have been tested in court. They're all just allegations, but that's how we got in this sort of situation where
it just keeps adding up.
It becomes then when you learn that Marshall Smith and roommates were living in a house owned by a family member of Sam Moraes, then, you know, that's why we do have conflict of interest rules, is to protect people.
Right. Now, where are we going with, I know there's all
where
kinds of investigations
going?
That have been launched. I mean, how many are there? Three? Two?
Well, there's the Auditor General, the RCMP, an internal investigation led by a Manitoba judge. It's unclear precisely what the ethics commissioner is doing right now.
Yep.
Let's see, what else do we have? The lawsuits.
Yes.
And
of which you are one.
I have, now, yep.
It's a badge of honor for a reporter. If you're not getting sued, you're not doing your job. You know how that works.
And, of course, the reporting. So there's a lot of people working to uncover what happened.
Do we ultimately get to the
I don't know.
The public inquiry, which everybody seems to think would be the best way to handle? I mean, sooner or later we have to, don't we?
I don't know. The government has rejected calls for a public inquiry, arguing there are plenty of investigations going on. One of the things that's difficult when you look at you know, a handful of investigations like the Auditor General, an internal investigation, and the RCMP is something like the Auditor General is limited to what the legislation says. You know, it's Auditor Generals tend to look at was was there criminal activity? And all of that is different than, you know, was it ethical?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Was it good for Albertans? You know, sometimes even just a question of, like, was it a good idea? And a public inquiry can maybe examine those basic things in a way that an Auditor General or the RCMP are not designed to. That's not their mandate.
Yeah, exactly. And yet, like I said, Carrie, this story isn't over. That's the thing, right? It continues to develop. It continues to advance. So who knows where it ends up? But so far, as I say, it's starting to pile up and a lot of questions. That's what it is at this point. It's questions that need answers, really.
Right. And that's sort of the purpose of some people who are pushing for a public inquiry.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, they would like answers. Right now, of course, the legislature is out for a long time, and that means that the government, or pardon me, the opposition, doesn't have a chance to just put questions to the government. It's also difficult for media to put questions to the government when they're not in the legislature, because often we don't know where they physically are on any given day. Some days we you know, they'll be doing an announcement and we can ask them, but it's not the same as when they're making themselves available, or they are available because they're trapped and have to walk by a bunch
yeah,
of reporters
exactly.
to get to work.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. Carrie, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for your reporting. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me, Shay.
You bet. Thanks very much.
AMG. Powerful, impressive, defining. It says a lot about you. Aspirational dream cars. At Lone Star Mercedes-Benz, they're on a clear out that you could only dream of. Until now, $50,000 off the model year 24 AMG GT four-door, $50,000 off the model year 24 S63. You achieve goals, you earn nice things. At Lone Star, we do more than provide you with those. We make your dreams a reality.
Let's go!
Cheers.
So much flavor.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This is going to be one hell of a competition.
What'd you guys make? The winning meal.
Wow.
There's a party happening in my mouth.
I'm here and I'm hungry.
Whoa. I love to cook.
Ooh, I was called the chef.
I must be doing something right.
This spring, only on Flavor Network. Stream on Stack TV.
Brought to you by Think Turkey, official launch partner of Flavor Network.
Hi, Calgary. It's Gord Gillies inviting you to feel the joy of making an impact with the Children's Hospital Lottery. Win an adventure-ready truck and RV package, a Lincoln Navigator, plus a trip to Fiji, or a $1.4 million dream home package. Every ticket you purchase helps to change the lives of thousands of kids across Alberta. Get your tickets today at childrenshospitallottery.ca.
License 730-858-18 plus. Play responsibly.
Global Fest returns this August, and you don't want to miss Calgary's most spectacular light show. Get your tickets now. For over 20 years, Global Fest celebrates a world of difference year-round with epic cultural performances at Heritage Park, daily multicultural programming at the Calgary Stampede, and so much more. Global Fest Summer Camp for Refugee and Immigrant Teens helps build community, connection, confidence, and a sense of belonging, because culture connects us all. Head to globalfest.ca and dive into the fire, fun, and festivity.
Hi, this is Mark Trozo with Prune It Up, Calgary's premier tree care company. Calgary's extreme weather can be very stressful on your trees and shrubs. Chinooks may feel great for us, but can cause many issues for your trees. At Prune It Up, we take preventative measures year-round to care for your trees to give them the best opportunity to thrive and grow. From pruning, removals, tree shaping, and plant health care programs, look no further than us. Local, skilled, passionate, professional. Spruce it up, green it up, prune it up. We've got you covered.
Watch the greatest names in golf compete in our own backyard. The Rogers Charity Classic returns to Canyon Meadows Golf and Country Club August 11th to 17th. Get your tickets now or visit qrcalgary.com for your chance to win a pair of tickets. The Rogers Charity Classic goes beyond world-class golf. It also has raised more than $137 million for over 290 children and youth charities across Alberta. For tickets and more info, visit rogerscharityclassic.com, proudly supported by QR Calgary.
Now this update from the Canadian press. King Charles and Queen Camilla will be in Canada tomorrow for the first time since the King's coronation more than 2 years ago. The King is set to open Parliament and deliver a throne speech on Tuesday, something Queen Elizabeth II did twice in 1957 and in 1977. An Ontario mayor says his town is still reeling from a car crash that killed a teacher and four teenage girls from a local school. Mayor Chris Peabody says almost everyone in Walkerton and the rest of the Brockton municipality have been touched by Friday's crash. Police reform and civil rights advocates joined thousands of people today to mark the fifth anniversary of George Floyd's murder at religious services, concerts, and vigils across the U.S. And Ontario Provincial Police are reminding people to wear life jackets after they had to rescue two people from the water this weekend. Officers responded to reports of two people who had gone into the water yesterday afternoon in Big Bay off the coast of the Georgian Bluffs after the kayak capsized. From the Canadian press, I'm David Augustine.
The Knee Clinic is Alberta's only private knee clinic, and they'll have your knee issue assessed within days. Call 403-457-KNEE or visit kneeclinic.ca.
This is Best Of Programming from Shea Ganim on QR Calgary.
We'll see what happens, but I think it is a foregone conclusion. For those who like it, it's great news. For those who don't like it, not good news. But we will have, before Albertans, within the next year or so, Premier Smith says the Alberta referendum ballot in 2026. I don't know what that means. I don't know when that is. But she's talking about the Alberta Next panel, having some consultations, doing some town halls, and then putting forward their recommendations for what should be on that panel. And she also said, hey, I'm not going to stand in the way of people who want to have a referendum on Alberta separation. She doesn't want to see it, but she won't stand in the way of it. Now, one big issue here, regardless of what happens with this referendum, is the fact that a number of Alberta First Nations have already spoken up and said, stop it. It's not happening. It's certainly not happening without us at the table, and we don't want to see it. Smith talked about that yesterday, too.
I also want to state unequivocally that as Premier, I'm entirely committed to protecting, upholding, and honoring the inherent rights of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples. Therefore, any citizen-initiated referendum question must not violate the constitutional rights of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples, and must uphold and honor Treaties 6, 7, and 8, should any referendum question ever pass. This is non-negotiable.
Okay. I think that is in direct response to, like I say, the flood of opposition that came from Alberta First Nations over the past week since Bill 54 was proposed that would lower the threshold for the citizen-led referendum and basically made it almost a certainty that we will have that referendum. Now, with First Nations saying loud and clear they don't want it, and Smith saying we don't want to do anything that will violate the agreements that are in place with First Nations, how do we go for it? Can you even go for it? Is this? I don't know. Let's see if we can find out. We're going to speak with Matthew Wildcat, the assistant professor in the Faculty of Arts with a focus on Indigenous relations at the University of Alberta. Matthew, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. And I'm also a member of Irvinskin Cree Nation as well.
Perfect. Okay, excellent, excellent. Now, like I say, I think it's a foregone conclusion that at this point we will see some kind of referendum put forward by the province sometime in the next year at the latest. I don't know exactly the timing will be. And so many Alberta First Nations in just the past couple of days have rebuked the Premier on even starting this conversation. Let's start there. Before we even get to the referendum, the opposition is strong and it's loud and it's clear. Why? What are Alberta First Nations saying at this point in the discussion?
Yeah, I think it's fairly simple to break down, although if you think about it, also extremely complicated. So what I think the Alberta chiefs are saying is that the legal foundation of this country, but in particular the province of Alberta, rests on treaties between First Nation people and the Crown, right? And the chiefs are very clear on this. You know, it's not a treaty between First Nations and Canada. It was a treaty between, you know, let alone Alberta. It was a treaty between First Nations and the British Crown, right? And so if that's the legal foundation, that has to be addressed first and foremost. So Premier Smith, what I will say is that this is the perspective I'm giving is from Indigenous peoples, right? Like how we think of the legal foundations of this country. But if you look at the way in which Canada has treated its own legal foundations, you know, when it's asked the question of itself, how did Canada come to acquire sovereignty, judges have typically ruled, oh, that's non-justiciable. We can't rule on that. And you can understand because judges can't take away the authority, which is giving them power to begin with, right? But if you ask, okay, well, then how did Canada come to acquire sovereignty if it wasn't for treaties? It becomes the doctrine of discovery, which is that, right, you know, a European showed up, an explorer, planted a flag, and then claimed all of Canada. And Canadians should be deeply concerned if we're saying that's the foundation of this country. And that's what this referendum will become about if, you know, probably if it goes forward no matter what. But if Indigenous peoples are not dealt with at all, it's going to become a question of, Is the foundation of this country treaties, or is it the doctrine of discovery, this, you know, historic racist way of thinking, which we should not want to found our country on?
So when the Premier says nothing will be done that will, you know, impede on Indigenous rights and treaties and their constitutional rights and all the rest of that stuff, how can you proceed with separation? And we're getting far down the road here. I don't think the referendum passes to begin with, but let's say it does. How can those two things happen at the same time? How can the Indigenous treaties and the rights, the constitutional rights of Alberta's First Nations be respected while at the same time the province talks about separation?
Yes, I don't know what kind of brilliant legal mind she has working for her that have undid that, but I don't see any way that that's possible, right? You know, Alberta could... you know, let's, you know, if we imagine a scenario where Alberta is trying to do this, the only legal foundation it can do it upon is just claiming the right, either even the doctrine of discovery, that, you know, that right again is flowing through the Canadian legal system.
Yeah.
But, you know, it means that what it means is that Indigenous peoples are going to be subject to the laws and authorities of the rest of Alberta without our consent, without any discussion, right? I don't see any way in which that happens, you know, because I think Indigenous peoples are being very, very clear and united on this situation, which is that this shouldn't even go to a vote to begin with, right? And the Blackfoot Confederacy was quite good. This bill reflects a serious miscalculation.
Where's the opposition coming from, and how uniform is it, Matthew? Because, I mean, listen, I think the vast majority of Albertans are we know that. The polling tells us that, you know, like three-quarters of Albertans want nothing to do with this, right? In terms of First Nations, are there any that are saying, you know what, this might be a good idea? We are entertaining this idea.
You know, historically, this is across Canada, but even across, you know, other jurisdictions, you know, similar jurisdictions like the U.S. and Australia, you know, smaller, you know, regional governments have tended to treat Indigenous peoples worse than larger federal governments, right? And so, it's very unlikely that you're going to have any Indigenous peoples who are going to, you know, roll the dice and say, you know what, I think we're going to be better off with Alberta than with Canada. And that's just like, you know, we don't have any way to kind of go inquire into whether that would be the case or not. But history tells us that that is the case. And that's the best that Indigenous peoples have to go off of in this moment.
Speaking of history, there are obviously some parallels to 1995 and the Quebec referendum. I mean, what did we learn then about how Indigenous rights would have to be handled as we had this conversation of separation? Can that tell us anything? Should we get to that point in Alberta?
You know, well, it did play a major role, probably not as prominent as it would today because the political landscape has changed. Right? I think Eric Adams made that point, a law professor at U of A, where, you know, indigenous rights are much more prominent today than they were in 1995.
Much bigger consideration.
The other thing I will say is that, you know, it was very, the 1995 referendum was extremely close. I forget. I feel like it was down to tens of thousands of votes.
Yeah, it was within 1%. Yeah.
Yeah, no. But I do know that, you know, I remember being told these stories as a kid. That, you know, the James Bay Cree ballots, when they came in, they were 100%, you know, against separation, and they were pretty close. You know, they if you add up all the indigenous people who might have voted in the province, it was pretty close to the margin of error. And so, you know, that might have been a decisive factor already in the 1995 referendum.
Interesting stuff. Matthew, we'll check in with you again on this as we go forward and get your insight. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really do appreciate
it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much. Matthew Wildcat, assistant professor in the Faculty of Arts with a focus of Indigenous relations at the University of Alberta. Now, I don't know how this works. Like, I don't, that's the interesting part. Like, you've got the premier saying, you know, full stop, treaties, constitutional rights of Alberta's Indigenous populations need to be respected. That's non-negotiable. Okay. If they vote to not leave, then if they don't want to leave and they have treaties and they have agreements and they have all these things that are in place saying that's, you know, that's their land within Canada. And like Matthew said, a lot of this goes back to the crown, like prior to Canada even existing. How do you make both those things happen at the same time? I get, you leave, but those lands stay behind. That's a heck of a lot of land. Like, I don't know. This is going to be a not to say that this isn't something that can somehow be worked through, but these are the kind of barriers that, you know, are there. These are the kind of massive, huge, enormous, constitutional, existential questions that are going to be put forward. It's not as simple as saying, yeah, that's it. We don't like it. You know, Liberals won again. We're done. We're leaving. Okay, what about, what about, what about, what about? There are a ton of things that will have to be sorted out. And this is a big one. This is a big one. And I think, as Matthew said, maybe it wasn't as big a consideration in 1995 in Quebec, but now, given where we are with recognition of, you know, being more respectful and honoring the agreements we've made with our First Nations communities, the federal government's going to be in a much different position than they were 30 years ago. It's going to be a very different conversation. So who knows? Who knows? Like I say, I think asking the question, I don't think any of this comes up in that, right? I don't think we get to a point where they can block a vote or anything like that, because the vote is non-binding, I'm sure. And then, like I say, hopefully it's defeated and we carry on and we don't have to worry about it anymore. But you're opening a big old can of worms is what we're doing here.
You know that you always get a great price on premium used vehicles at House of Cars, but now you can get even more. Don't miss the amazing giveaway happening now at House of Cars. There are weekly draws for incredible prizes, barbecues, TVs, Yeti mugs and coolers, remote starters and more. Plus, you could win the grand prize of 10 grand. No strings attached and no purchase necessary. Enter in person at House of Cars. Find the location closest to you and shop for your new ride at houseofcars.com.
Toast to Stampede season at Stampede Cellar Uncorked. Featuring the champion wines from the Stampede Cellar Showdown International Wine Competition and local culinary offerings from Alberta's top restaurants, Stampede Cellar Uncorked has something to suit every palate and preference, from bold reds to crisp whites and more. Join us May 31st to sip, swirl, and savor wines and vote for best bites of the night. For more information and tickets, visit calgarystampede.com/uncorked.
Feel the joy of making an impact with the Children's Hospital Lottery. You could win the bonus prize of an incredible truck and RV package or cash. The bonus deadline is June 20th. Get your tickets today.
License 730-858. 18 plus. Play responsibly.
Measles outbreaks are occurring in Canada, including Alberta. These outbreaks are highly preventable. Measles is an extremely contagious disease that is spread easily through the air. The best way to protect yourself, your family, and your community is to ensure you are up to date with your immunizations. Don't get measles. Get immunized. Visit alberta.ca/measles to find out if you're up to date and what to do if you're not. A message from the Government of Alberta.
Do you have leaky and drafty windows and doors? Head to Window Mart.
They're the experts that you can trust to keep your home warm and cozy. Visit one of four showrooms across the province. Book your free consultation and estimate today at windowmart.ca.
Okay, so you want to know what makes Stack TV so special? Is it the stars? The buzzworthy shows? Iconic reality programs? Yes! And because every single day, we add new entertainment for you to enjoy. Stream on Monday and watch new episodes of The Day of the Jackal with Eddie Redmayne. Tune in on Wednesday and get hooked on Based on a True Story with Kaylee Cuoco. Binging on Friday? Why not stream Rick and Morty with, well, Rick and Morty? Now that's special. Stack TV has new shows streaming every day. Try it free. Applicable membership required. Restrictions apply.
I'm Susan Holzman with the Calgary Children's Foundation. QR Calgary is happy to welcome Agnew Insurance, representing cooperators, as our hero of the month. Agnew Insurance is well known for their outstanding service when it comes to your insurance and financial needs. What you might not know is their dedication to their community and local charities. This month, Agnew Insurance will be making a generous donation to the Calgary Children's Foundation to help make the lives of children better in our community. Join QR Calgary as we salute Agnew Insurance as our hero of the month.
Gluten-free doesn't mean you have to miss out. The Cookie Jar is Calgary's 100% gluten-free bakery.
Hey, it's Devin from The Cookie Jar. We know how hard it is to manage a gluten-free diet, so we created a place where everything is 100% gluten-free without sacrificing the flavor. Have you been craving cake, bread, cookies, or pizza? Then come in for a visit and see how delicious gluten-free can be.
Visit The Cookie Jar Gluten-Free Bakery at 128 28th Street Southeast, or Google The Cookie Jar Calgary to see everything they offer.
Kick off the season with Stampeders VIP Night Out. Keep it on QR Calgary to win red zone seats for you and three friends for the June 7th home opener against the Ticats. Plus, pregame on the west sidelines and VIP entry to Stamps House for an amazing meal before the game. You'll even hang out with Sarah and Andy. Listen for the VIP night code word at 6 a.m., 8 a.m., 3 p.m., 5 p.m., and 7 p.m. Then enter it at QRCalgary.com. Win a Stamps VIP Night Out from your Stampeder station, QR Calgary.
You're listening to the best of Shea Ganim, 9 to noon weekdays on QR Calgary.
The Western Premiers have gathered there in Yellowknife, and they're having the Western Premiers meetings. And one of the things that they're talking about, trade, of course, one of the big ones, we know that, but Arctic security, right at the top of the list. Now, this shouldn't surprise anybody, because Arctic security is something that comes up regularly, and not just with the Western Premiers of Canada, but with the United States. As you know, Donald Trump has talked a lot about security in the region. This is the whole Greenland conversation, too. But it's not just us. There's Russia that's involved. There's China. There's all kinds of players that are here. And just the way things are changing globally and in terms of the climate, it's a region that is now far more important than perhaps it was even just a few years ago. So where does it go? China, not just sitting by idly, even though they're not one of the key players, they have a presence and they want a larger presence. And where does the Arctic ultimately end up? We've heard a lot of talk about it. What direction are we going in? We're going to speak now about that with Kieran Mulvaney, who is an author, regular contributor to National Geographic, actually. He's written for a bunch of other publications, though, The Guardian, Washington Post Magazine. And he recently wrote a piece for The Walrus talking about China's designs on the North. Kieran, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
So I think, you know, as I say, in a lot of ways, most of us view the Arctic as kind of like a no man's land, right? Like, of course it isn't. It belongs to different parts of the country, different countries and things like that. There are international agreements between those countries. But in a lot of ways, we don't really pay a lot of attention to who runs what where, do we?
No, I mean, that's exactly right. And it kind of depends, you know, different nations pay a lot more attention than others, of course. You know, Canada obviously a lot more than the United States, which seems to forget a lot of the times that it is an Arctic nation and forgets that it needs things like icebreakers. Russia, obviously, as you sort of alluded to in the intro, very much focused on the Arctic and very much focused on territory and infrastructure and commercial gains. And like you said, also, you have some non-Arctic states like China that are beginning to take a bit of an interest.
So in terms of conversations, I mean, there is actually a group that's identified as involved in the Arctic, and they, I guess, you wouldn't want to call it the G7, but it's that kind of a group where they have conversations about the Arctic, right?
That's right. It's the Arctic Council, and it comprises the main members are the eight Arctic nations, right. the countries that surround the Arctic. But it also has observers. Indigenous nations are active participants and equal participants. The Arctic Council has been struggling a little bit over the last couple of years because it operates on a consensus. It's like, you know, the quorum basically is to have all eight members. Russia has been excluded from a lot of the principal kind of public meetings ever since the invasion of Ukraine. But what's been happening is there's been some quiet kind of backdoor maneuvering to make sure that all the working groups, you know, all the grunt work that's important, like these are the guidelines for what kind of fuel can be used in the Arctic, yeah, and all this kind of stuff. That's still going on a little bit.
Where does Canada fit into all this? I mean, we are on the front lines. So we have a massive presence in the Arctic. So where do we fit into the Arctic Council? How big of a player is Canada?
Very big, very significant. And, you know, obviously looking to potentially become more significant.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is going to be based around the Northwest Passage and to what extent the Northwest Passage does or does not open and become increasingly navigable in years to come. The big disagreement there is, on the one hand, we've got some strange bedfellows here, right? Because on the one hand, you have Canada and Russia who say, hey, these Arctic seaways, they're through our territories. They're going to be national waters. If they open up, we get to decide who goes through these waters. And then you have the United States and China on the other side saying, no, these are going to be international straits. You can connect the Atlantic to the Pacific. Anybody should be able to go through this. And it's very early days, and it's a very low-level kind of rumbling disagreement, but it's there.
Yeah.
And if the Northeast Passage and the Northwest Passage do become more open, that's potentially going to be a bit more of an issue.
What about the U.S.? I mean, of course, they have their presence in the Arctic. They do have, it may not be huge, but it's there. Well, how interested are they? Because we keep hearing Russia, China, Canada. The U.S. talks a lot about, you know, working with Canada, but how do they flex those giant muscles in the North at all?
It's been a lot of whiplash with the U.S. attitude toward the Arctic of late, honestly.
That's surprising, yeah.
It traditionally has not taken a very great interest. It's essentially kind of handed over Arctic policy to its Alaskan congressional caucus, particularly Lisa Murkowski, who does a lot of work on the Arctic. But you had, you know, under the Obama and Biden administrations, much more of an interest in sort of becoming more of a player in the Arctic Council and more of a cooperative player, working with other nations, looking to the fact that the Arctic is changing and trying to look for ways in which countries can best respond to that cooperatively. Under the present administration and, you know, the previous Trump administration, that's totally different. A lot of the ways that positions have been expressed are very different now. The previous Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, managed to offend everybody in the Arctic Council by calling Canada's claims to the Arctic illegitimate and Russia's claims to the Arctic illegitimate. And I think there's a lot of whiplash trying to figure out exactly what the United States wants and exactly what. It doesn't seem to have, under this present administration, a cohesive Arctic strategy. It just seems to be very focused on, oh, China and Russia are in the Arctic, we must be too.
And China, I mean, I don't know if they're taking advantage of a vacuum, perhaps, but China definitely, as we said, they're observer status. They're not part of the council. In terms of having an Arctic presence, it's debatable, but they're going to be a player. They want to be a player, right? They've made that clear.
Very much. And I think part of it is a sense of China wants to be taken seriously as a great power. And so it looks at what other great powers are doing and says, we should be doing that too. So it also, for example, has a presence in Antarctica and a research presence there. But also the thing with China, boy, they play the long game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, 50 years from now, we might have some open waterways. Let's start planning for that. Let's start upgrading our Arctic capable fleets. Let's start being involved in things like the Arctic Council. Let's start making our positions felt. Let's start influencing things. They're playing the long game. You know, in the United States, and probably the same in Canada, you kind of look ahead to the next election. China's looking ahead to 2050, 2060, and beyond.
Super smart, really, right? I mean, it's sort of putting the things in place.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, if you can do that and you don't have any opposition to sort of push back on you, then I guess you can absolutely do that. But, you know, it shows up at a number of different Arctic
gatherings. I go to one every October in Reykjavik that has like 4,000 people and governments and military and researchers. And it increasingly is sort of starting to flex its muscles a little bit. And I think to some extent, if it's taking advantage of a vacuum, it's taking advantage of Russia being excluded from a lot of these meetings at present to sort of fill that role a little bit. It's some of it is overplayed.
Yeah.
You know, NATO, the United States, have talked about China's, you know, sending warships up here and there, and they're going to take, they have all these grand plans of the Arctic. That's overstated. They're being, at the moment, pragmatic. You don't want to be Pollyanna-ish about it. China's definitely interested in the Arctic. But at present, it's very much a case of sort of looking at the lay of the land and seeing what they can do.
How serious is that being taken? Is this on the radar for the Arctic Council? Are they, because like we've talked so much about this, Kieran, in terms of we've got to protect the North, we've got to establish security presence. I mean, and China's openly saying, yeah, well, we've got eyes on what's going to happen here. Are we taking this seriously enough, do you think, in the West?
Yeah, I think so, actually. You know, there have been some attempts by Chinese company to buy some infrastructure, Arctic infrastructure in Canada, in Greenland, and those have been resisted for precisely the reason, like, well, we don't really want to have a Trojan horse in here. So yes, very much. It's also, I sort of don't want to give the impression that like everybody's getting ready to throw down here, and it's, you know, it's every country for themselves. There's still a pretty strong cooperative effort in the sense that the Arctic nations would rather disagree among each other but be together than allow other countries in. So, for example, Russia about 20 years ago, a Russian ship dropped a Russian flag onto the seabed at the North Pole. And that created initially like all kinds of freakouts. And there was talk about, oh, we should have an independent Arctic treaty. The UN should be involved. And then when all the Arctic countries realized about what was happening, Russia kind of pulled back a little bit and was like, no. Actually, the Arctic Council's good. We've got this. It's more a case of the eight Arctic countries would rather disagree with each other and just deal with it that way than have anybody else come on in. And so I think when push comes to shove a little bit, the present Arctic countries are going to push back a little bit if they feel China's pushing too far.
Well, that's good. That's encouraging to hear. At least they're on the case. Great conversation. Kieran, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks very much. Really appreciate it.
Craving a great meal at a great price? Head to IHOP. For a limited time, enjoy our new House Faves value menu featuring a golden French toast breakfast, delicious ham and cheese omelet with pancakes, or a tasty roast turkey sandwich for only $13.99, including a coffee, tea, or soft drink. Available at IHOP Prairies all day Monday to Friday. Canadian owned and operated.
We're talking about what's the best way and the easiest way to get a mortgage. We're here with Jason Hominick. And Jason, I think the easy thing probably to do is just to sign that letter the bank's going to send me, right?
You know, the bank relies on that. And because of that, especially if you've renewed with them before, they know that and they don't offer you the best rate because they know you're just going to sign back. Never sign that first offer from your bank. If you have questions about that, you go right to my website at jason.mortgage. Contact me. I'll walk you through the process.
Guess what juicy gossip I got this morning? You're not going to believe this. Save On Foods is doing it again. But I was told not to tell anyone. So naturally, I told my best friend. And now the news is spreading faster than gossip at my book club.
$1.49 Day is back this Tuesday at Save On Foods. Pick up your favorites for just $1.49.
$1.49 Day, Tuesday.
Hurry before it's over and spread the word. Learn more at SaveOnFoods.com.
The first ever Calgary Health Foundation Home Lottery Mountain Edition is over 50% sold. Win the $2.7 million grand prize Canmore Villa in Spring Creek. Just imagine weekend escapes or full-time living in your own Rocky Mountain retreat plus $50,000 cash. Don't forget to add on the 50-50 and cash calendar for a mountain of cash. Hurry, tickets are over 50% sold. Advancing care for better lives. Tickets at CalgaryMountainHomeLottery.com.
Live healthy, live happy, live in a loving community. Welcome to the Manor Village, a place where seniors have fun together while living a full life. The Manor Village is more than a beautiful residence. They surround seniors with wonderful people that treat your loved ones with respect, kindness, and care. Experience elevated senior living with fitness and entertainment programs, Red Seal culinary experiences, and more. Manor Village, the community with heart. See all 9 locations and schedule your tour at themanorvillage.com.
Love playing Baccarat? Then Cowboys Casino invites you to join the Wild Hunt. From now until June 19th, play Easy Baccarat and win up to $8,888. You score ballot entries when winning $10 plus on Panda or Dragon side bets for a shot at Cowboys Casino's June 19th cash tournament. And it gets even better. You get double the ballots when Panda kills Dragon. Ask your dealer for details. It's time to join the Wild Hunt only at Cowboys Casino. Please play responsibly.
Want to hear us on your Amazon Echo device? Simply say, Alexa, play QR Calgary.
QR Calgary is 770 CHQR AM, a Chorus Entertainment radio station.
In the national newsroom of the Canadian Press, I'm David Augustine. Prime Minister Mark Carney says he plans to move briskly on his governing agenda. Carney outlined his legislative agenda to the Liberal caucus this afternoon in a speech meant to rally the troops. Carney vowed to quickly bring in measures to make life more affordable, along with new legislation to remove internal trade barriers and fast-track infrastructure projects to help boost the economy.
We will deliver these mandates with urgency and determination. We are going to get going from minute one.
Carney says his first priority will be delivering a tax cut he promised during the election campaign. He plans to slash the lowest income bracket by 1 point. Well, with Parliament's reopening just a few hours away, Pierre Poilievre says Conservatives owe it to Canadians to fight for issues they promised during the campaign. He says Canadians who voted Conservative deserve to have their voices heard in Parliament.
They voted for hope, for a change. And while we narrowly missed forming government, we now have every duty to fulfill that hope and fight for that change. And that change means a Canada that is affordable, safe,